Madam Chief Justice, may it please the Court, Paul Kugelman on behalf of the Marine Resources Commission. With the Court's permission, I will reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right.
The Commission asked this Court to reverse the Court of Appeals and to find that Section 28.2-1203 of the Code of Virginia applies here. In summary, because Section 1203 is clear and unambiguous, the plain meanings of the term trespass and encroach apply. Thus, the Court of Appeals erred in modifying the definitions of these terms through Article 11 of the Constitution of Virginia and the Public Trust Doctrine. What's more, the Constitution of Virginia and the Public Trust Doctrine impose a duty on the Commonwealth do not operate to limit its authority. Further, by limiting the Commission's jurisdiction, the Court of Appeals impermissibly alters the common law, and that's another basis for its error. Additionally, 1203, applying it here, leads to a sensible result and not to an absurd one. And finally, the Commission argues that 1203 applies here because the restaurant expansion is an encroachment of a state on bottom land and is unpermitted by the Commission. Turning to the first issue, the plain meanings of the terms trespass and encroach apply because 1203 is clear and unambiguous. It simply states, it shall be unlawful for any person to build, dump, trespass, or encroach upon or over, or take or use any materials from the beds, the bays, ocean, rivers, streams, or creeks, which are the property of the Commonwealth, unless such act is performed pursuant to a permit issued by the Commission or is necessary for the following, and it enumerates certain exceptions, none of which apply here. 1203 is clear. It is unambiguous. It has singular meaning. It is easy to understand. When statutory terms are plain and unambiguous, this Court holds that the terms are applied according to their plain meaning without resort to rules of statutory construction or parole evidence. Because the plain meaning of these terms apply, the Court made error when it imposed the limitations upon these definitions. And again, the Constitution of Virginia, Article 11, Sections 1 and 2, impose a duty on the Commonwealth to protect this resource. In pertinent part, Section 1 states that it shall be the Commonwealth's policy to protect its lands and waters from impairment for the benefit, enjoyment, and general welfare of the people of the Commonwealth. Section 2 enables the General Assembly, the Commonwealth of Virginia, to advance this policy through agencies. Additionally, the Public Trust Doctrine provides that the state holds the land lying beneath the public waters as trustee for the benefit of all citizens. It goes on to say that the Commonwealth is responsible for the proper management of the resource to ensure the preservation and protection of all appropriate current and potential future uses, including potentially conflicting uses by the public. Turning to the next point, the Court of Appeals impermissibly alters the common law. By imposing these limitations, it destroys portions of its just private interest in certain portions of the Commonwealth's bottom land by taking from the Commonwealth, vis-a-vis the Commission, the jurisdiction over land, over submerged lands that is not used for hunting, fishing, fowling, trapping, or taking shellfish from the bottom. Because this is an impermissible alteration of the common law, that is also error. Just to highlight that a little bit more, for a statutory change to affect a change in the common law, that occurs only when the statutory language expressly states it or is necessarily implied by its language. Reading 1203, there is no express change in the common law, and there is no change by necessary implication.
Counsel, as I read the circuit court's opinion and the commission's opinion, it seems that they concluded that this barge, whatever, was a vessel.
Yes, ma'am.
How does that affect the analysis here?
What I would submit to the court is this. When we look at 28.2-1203, it says it's unlawful to encroach over bottom lands of the Commonwealth without a permission of the Commission. And then it goes to enumerate exceptions. What I would submit is that when we look at the statutory interpretive principle of expressio unus est exclusio alteris, looking at the enumerations, that everything that's not in the enumeration should be considered a trespass or encroach. However, comma, there's a little bit further depth to the analysis because 1203 doesn't alter the common law. We have what's the right of navigation. that is implicitly recognized in the statute. The right of navigation, going back all the way to English common law, based on the law review article that I cited in my reply brief, explains that more fully. But basically what it comes down to is when an object is using the waters as a highway, it is invoking the right of navigation. To invoke the right of navigation, you basically have to be using the waters of the Commonwealth as an incident to transportation. When we get to this particular scenario, and this is why 1203 applies here, using whatever mechanism or structure object you want to, once you use that to expand an upland structure, for the purposes as was used here, to expand the footprint of a restaurant, it's not being used for the incident of transportation. And because it's not being used for the incident of transportation, the common law right of navigation is not invoked. Additionally, none of the exceptions apply here in 1203. Therefore, it's encroachment over state-owned bottomland because it's unpermitted use of the Commonwealth's property.
So I think that your position would be then a boat that's going down the navigable waters and docks overnight or for two or three days would not be an encroachment.
Because it's an incident to travel, correct? No.
Let's push a little bit farther. Let's say that it was a vessel that was moored for even 2 months. They took it that long to load it or whatever else, but was still planning on navigating down the river. It might still be a vessel for navigation purposes.
Again, going back to the test, the litmus test being an incident of travel, that would be correct. That would not violate 1203.
So one of the key factors here is the fact that they were using it as a portion of the restaurant as opposed to anything to do with navigation.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And unless there are any other questions, that sums up the Commission's position. With that, Madam Chief Justice, I'll just respond.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Seeing the swearing-ins this morning, it's been many, many decades since I was sworn in and then immediately went to work for Chief Justice Eggleston, and you know how many years ago that was. The beginning point that I want to make is this. We are dealing with a temporarily moored vessel. No ifs, ands, and buts. The trial court so found, and the trial court even found that the majority of the commission had viewed it as a vessel. This finding was not preserved on appeal by the commission under 5A18. It has been conceded by the commission that the issue was not preserved on appeal, both before the panel and the Court of Appeals in back.
The commission conceded a point of federal law, did they not?
No, I don't believe it is federal law. I think it's basically a fact and a mixed question of fact.
The question of whether it was a vessel or not was not in the context of 1 U.S.C. Section 3 at the time?
Yes, that is the definition of a vessel.
Because, in fact, the question was argued in order to determine whether the commission had jurisdiction under state law or whether it had been precluded by federal law pursuant to that statute. Is that correct?
Preemption was not really an issue, sir.
Was that federal statute an issue?
Preemption only became an issue with the Court of Appeals panel. Throughout this whole procedure, we have contended that under Section 28.2.1203, the Commission did not have jurisdiction of a temporarily moored vessel.
And vessel was as defined by federal law?
Yes, it is.
And federal law has changed.
The Lowen case did not change Title I, Section 3, Lowman in no way changed Stewart versus Dutra.
Did Lowman change the definition of a vessel for purposes of Title I, Section 3?
The Lowman case was fact-specific. And when you look at, I believe it's footnote 2 of the Court of Appeals panel in bank, you can see that the Court of Appeals in bank correctly applied the proper definition. It talks about practicalities, and that's what the Court of Appeals in fact said in footnote 2. That's the way that they looked at Stewart. Stewart was not overruled, nor was the title sermon. In any event, it was conceded to be a vessel before the panel. It was conceded to be a vessel before the Court of Appeals and back. And I would submit to you that, legally speaking, the commission is hung with that determination before this court.
Well, do you think that's the end of the inquiry, or is there more?
No, I think we have to move further.
Okay.
But that is the beginning point. That is a temporarily moored vessel. And accordingly, under Section 28.2-1203 and 4, is a transiting or temporarily moored vessel, whether used or not used in conjunction with some unspecified land use, as opposed to a fixed structure, which was the commission's position before the trial court, subject to BMRC jurisdiction and its permitting procedure. More specifically, is a transiting or moored vessel, and a moored vessel is a vessel in navigation under Stewart versus Dutra and all the federal cases.
Counsel, let me give you a hypothetical. Instead of this vessel being there for 4 months, what if it was there for 363 days a year, but it was untied and towed to a repair yard once a year for a weekend in order simply to be painted and repaired and things of that nature, and then it was towed back? Is that a temporarily moored vessel?
It is still a temporarily moored vessel. And let me quickly point out that
if that continues for a decade, is it still a temporarily moored vessel?
Under federal law, it is a vessel until it is withdrawn from navigation. It can be withdrawn from navigation in basically two ways. It becomes a permanent part of the land, or it is laying on the bottom. And that's what all the federal cases say. Until that time, it remains a vessel. Judge Davis, Federal District Court in the Eastern District, recently had a case involving the Vandenberg, which had been in the ghost fleet for decades and then pulled around to Norfolk for refurbishing to be carried down to Florida and scuppered. It's still a vessel. And it's still a vessel based under federal law, which determines, as you say, what is a vessel, along with the facts.
Well, the Commonwealth has a doctrine of navigation that Mr. Kugelman has just recited to us. Does the federal law, you just used the term navigation, does the federal law of navigation preclude Virginia's navigation doctrine?
Before we ever get into what may be called preemption, we have to determine whether the language of 1203 attaches jurisdiction to the commission. Now, that point was found by the Court of Appeals in Bank. In our briefs before the Court of Appeals in Bank, the commission accepts the fact that you must find an attaching Virginia statute first. And we agree. Only then do you get into a question of preemption. So the ultimate aim here, as Your Honor suggested, the beginning point is vessel, but then we move to the next point, is whether when you look at the statute, when you look at the words encroach or trespass, whether 1203 gives the commission jurisdiction. Is a transiting or moored vessel, and again, a moored vessel is a vessel of navigation under Stewart, no question. And exercising the right of navigation guaranteed under the United States Constitution. And in the 1932 case, the Newport News case, this court has said there is a state right of navigation also, the so-called just publicum right, where there is a right of navigation. So with that, is a temporarily moored vessel encroaching or trespassing on state bottom and thus acting unlawfully? Did the General Assembly, by the enactment of 1203, intend to give the Commission the right and authority to regulate a transiting or temporarily moored vessel, assuming that it could constitutionally do so, which is an issue in and of itself? The Court of Appeals, applying the plain meaning test, and given the requisite credence to the public trust doctrine, which it was supposed to do, concluded that the legislature, by the use of the words encroach and or trespass, and when we look at the definition of encroach, as they did, defined as entering by gradual steps or by stealth into the possession of another, to intrude unlawfully, did they intend to make the temporarily mooring of a vessel unlawful and equate it to encroachment or trespass, which is unlawful? A moored vessel, temporarily moored vessel, is not entering by stealth. It is not intruding unlawfully. I mean, just think about it for a minute. How can it be unlawful and thus be an encroachment or trespass if there is a constitutional right to moor temporarily? And to address Your Honor's question, if you recall the hypothetical that was thrown out by Judge Lowe, it was my barge that was moored beside his bulkhead for 3 months, and the commission said, no problem, not withdrawn from navigation. You know, we're talking about temporarily moored here for 4 months. 1203 makes no distinction between how long it's moored.
Counsel, I would like to offer you another hypothetical and ask how we should rule on it. Same vessel that we're talking about here pulls up to the same place adjacent to the shore, same gangway, all of that. But because the patrons of the restaurant have complained about the vessel rocking back and forth, the restaurant sinks pylons on property that it is permitted to do so. Bolts those pylons to the vessel so that it's no longer rocking back and forth. But nonetheless, it extends into the waters of the Commonwealth as it does now. Is that vessel temporarily moored, or is it permanently affixed?
The question then begins, Your Honor, do we still have a vessel? Because at that point in time, depending on how it is attached, it may cease to have been a vessel if it's attached in such a way that it becomes a permanent fixture attached to the upland.
So if I take a rope, if I have this vessel and I take a rope and I wrap that rope around the pylon, according to you, it's a vessel. If I take the exact same vessel and I run a bolt through the pier and I attach that bolt simply with a hand tool, it's no longer a vessel. Is that correct?
You cannot decide that on those elementary facts. If there has to be a conclusion drawn and facts to support that it has been withdrawn from navigation.
Counsel, I changed just one fact of your case. Okay. Instead of tying it up, I ran a bolt through a pylon and I attached it to a piece of your vessel. That's the only fact that has changed. How would we rule?
And I would say if that bolt could be easily removed at the end of 4 months, then it is still a vessel.
Okay.
That's the distinction.
Counsel, if I understand your position, and correct me if I'm wrong, as long as something remains a vessel, then it's not subject to be in violation of this particular statute.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
As long as an object remains a vessel, as we've defined that, or as the federal law defines that, then it will not be a violation. The use of that in any way will not be a violation of this statute.
No.
As long as it remains a vessel.
That's right. As long as it's a vessel, it's not an encroachment. And if I would note, how can it, encroach is unlawful. How can it be unlawful if it has a right to navigate and has a right to moor? It can't be unlawful.
Let me ask you, counsel, does it lose its navigability, that's maybe a poor choice of words, if it's no longer used as a vessel, if it's used as a part of the restaurant? Doesn't the use have some impact upon upon whether it still remains a vessel for purposes of navigation?
No, I don't think it does. And we cited a myriad cases in our brief which dealt into that very point. You had dormitories, floating dormitories. You even, in one federal case, had a floating restroom, and they were still vessels. So, I mean, there is nothing in 1203 that in any way deals with its use or how you classify the use or anything other under 1203.
Well, you keep talking about federal cases.
You
keep talking about federal cases. Do they control here? I know we looked at them for guidance, but do they control?
They control what is a vessel. And then with the fact of what you have as a vessel, the second question and the question before this court is, if it is a vessel, is it an encroachment or trespass under 1203 for it to temporarily moor? That is the question.
Why does federal law control what is a vessel? And if it, indeed it does, why does Lohmann not give us the direction we need? I don't see how you can have it both ways. How you can say federal law controls, but Lohmann doesn't.
No one has contended that federal law does not control what is a vessel. The commission has indicated that, and the commission has briefed it that particular way.
Okay.
Though their argument in lower court was it was a fixed thing.
Then why are we not required to follow Lohmann, if that's indeed the case?
Because Lohmann, sir, is fact-specific. It does in no way control this case. I mean, we know what we had in Lohmann. We had a floating house. In this particular case,
floating restaurant.
But it was a barge minutes before it was put into this slip and had been used as a barge and was going to continue to be used as a barge when it was pulled away 4 months later. It was not designed as a restaurant. It wasn't a built-out addition to the Chincoteague Inn. It was a barge. It at one point it had Coast Guard registration. It had been used as a barge, and it was going to be continued to be used as a barge. And as the Court of Appeals says, think of the stupendous consequences if this court gives the commission that jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Giving the test that the inn advances would permit someone to build a bridge all the way across the Chesapeake Bay as long as they could disassemble it and move the pieces within any matter of time. That is not, I would submit to the court, the correct analysis. I will also point out that the inn
does not... Well, a bridge is not a vessel, is it?
I'm sorry?
A bridge is not a vessel.
Let's say it was composed of barges like the one we have here, Your Honor.
On it instead of over it.
I'm having a hard time hearing
you.
You're
talking about on it instead of over it. I thought you said a bridge over it.
I'm sorry. Right. I see the distinction. Yes, Your Honor, exactly right. Somebody put these
barges
together.
You're referring to a pontoon bridge, perhaps?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That would mean that the commission would have no jurisdiction here. The Commonwealth has no ability to say you cannot do that. We go back to 1203 in the analysis the commission advances. The object of the encroachment and the length of time of the encroachment is immaterial. It's an encroachment unless the commission permits it, or it's one of the enumerated exceptions, or the common law allows it.
Well, wait a second.
Go ahead.
The length of time is immaterial? I thought we said if a barge was moored there with the intention of loading up and then moving on down the river for even 3 or 4 months, it would still be temporarily moored and it would not be an encroachment.
That's correct.
What are you saying then?
And perhaps I didn't explain myself clear enough here, and I apologize. What I mean is that's being used as an incident to navigation.
Right.
But once you convert, use the vessel.
So is it the use that's key? That's why I tried to ask opposing counsel, and he said that there are a number of federal cases that said that was not significant. Is, in fact, the use significant in this case?
I would submit to the court, federal law is not germane here.
Well, that's a good question. Answer, too.
The reason it's not germane is because while counsel said something about a constitutional right to moor, I've read the U.S. Constitution, there is no such thing. Federal maritime law flows from the Commerce Clause.
and what federal maritime law does. And the analysis that's been presented to the court, I would submit, is a little bit backwards. It's not whether it's a vessel, then maritime, then federal law applies. It's, okay, we have a federal maritime case. The next question is, does maritime law apply? Meaning, the question leads to, is it a vessel? It's not the other way around, where it's a vessel, therefore maritime law applies. It's, or federal law applies, it's, we want to apply federal maritime law. The next question is this a vessel for the purposes of applying maritime law?
Well, you don't think whether or not it's a vessel is the end of the inquiry either.
I don't think it has anything to do with the inquiry
okay.
here, Your Honor.
Okay.
I don't think it has one bit of impact on the calculus whatsoever. I would submit to the court that the question that needs to be asked is the use incidental to transportation.
Okay, a vessel is obviously capable of being used in navigable waters. You're saying if it's not, if its use is not to use navigable waters, that's the way we should look at it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that goes back to, it doesn't matter how long it is. If it's there for 10 years, if it's there for 15 years, as long as it's in, the use is incidental to transportation, it's fine. I think we have a dead fleet up in the James River. I remember being in the Naval Reserve, and that was the ships that we were going to use to activate. I don't know how long they've been there, but they're still incidental to transportation. As counsel for the inn has pointed out, it was a barge all the way up until we converted it to a restaurant expansion. We apply the same test here. It's, the incident is no longer one of transportation. It's one of expanding an upland structure. Therefore, it takes it. It's no longer invoking the right of navigation. And therefore, the limitation on the terms trespass and encroach no longer apply, and there under 1203, the commission gains jurisdiction.
How would we apply that? Is it if they unhook it every night and float it back out into the water, is it a vessel at that point, and then they float it back in the morning and hook it back up, it's not a vessel?
That's correct, Your Honor, and I would go back again to applying the litmus test of incident of transportation. Once its use is to expand the upland structure here, it doesn't matter what it was doing 5 minutes before or 5 minutes after. And again, that's why it's important, I think, for the Commission's position to be, or, well, rightly so, that the length of the encroachment is immaterial as well. It's an encroachment based on the definition once you intrude into the rights or property of another. Now, practically speaking, is the Commission going to be running around handing out enforcement actions for somebody who's done it for 5 seconds? I doubt it. But this...
Well, you wouldn't at all, because if it's still in navigation, you wouldn't hand out any... It wouldn't be an encroachment if it was still in navigation, would it?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
That is absolutely correct.
I think in response to my question, you said once they hook it up to the restaurant, it's no longer a vessel.
Right. Once its use becomes the expansion of the upland structure here, once it's and, you know,
so they're just docked for the night without the intent of having guests come over and eat dinner on it, then its use has not become that of the restaurant. But they're
correct.
Just
correct. I mean, I'll even submit an example to the court. Suppose there was the inn took this expansion out 100 yards and ran a dinghy service back and forth. It would be floating free, maybe just anchored. It would have, for all intents and purposes, the appearance of a vessel, even perhaps under 1 U.S.C. 3 as it's currently articulated by or limited by the U.S. Supreme Court. However, comma, I apologize, however...
I've done the same thing.
Thank you, sir. However, once you're using that as an appurtenance, albeit a distance appurtenance, to the restaurant, because it's no longer being used as an incident of navigation on the waters of the highway, liquid highway of the Commonwealth, the commission would then have jurisdiction because you're no longer engaged in anything that's an incident to transportation. You've arrogated to, the inn has arrogated to itself the use of the Commonwealth's bottom land for a commercial purpose, not a public one.
Let me ask you this question. I mean, suppose I have a yacht that will sleep, you know, four or five people or something, and I moor it next to my house on the water, and I use it while it's moored there, which is most of the time, as a guest house for, you know, overflow guests at my home. And I actually only take it out into the water to navigate, you know, once or twice a year. What's its use? Is it encroaching at that point?
Well, it's incident. The use is an incident of transportation. I would say that there are instances, plenty ample, where boats are tied up to places and stayed there for a while, and people live on and off of them. The use is as a boat. It's still an incident of transportation. But I mean, I understand the court's question. That's getting closer.
I know where to draw the line. I mean, I'm using it at least for a significant amount of time as a guest house. It just happens to be a floating guest house.
I would submit to the court that while there are cases at close to the line that may have to be need further determination, I would submit that the Commonwealth's test would be that, my time has expired.
Go ahead,
I finish
answer
answering.
The question.
Would be that it's still an incidental use to navigation. If we look at our gut reaction, if you will, the normal course of our experience over not only here but hundreds of years, that's an incident of navigation, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Call the next case.